This is Vandana Shiva, and you're listening to the Enviro Show. Remember, listen to your mother.
Greetings, Earthlings. It's a poisonous Enviro Show. I am one of your co-hosts, Dio. I am not in the studio with...
Hey, this is Glenn Ayers.
Hey, Glenn. You may recall our previous shows on rodenticide poisoning, leading to tragic deaths of key predators, as well as sometimes family pets. This time, Laura Kiesel of Save Arlington Wildlife joins us to discuss a petition to the Pesticide Board Subcommittee of the Massachusetts Department of Agricultural Resources to immediately suspend the registrations of all anticoagulant rodenticide products and conduct an individual review of their active ingredients. All right, so let's end the slaughter. What do you say? On to the Enviro Show quote of the week. The Enviro Show quote of the week is spot on for this show. Quote, we need in a special way to work twice as hard to help people understand that the animals are fellow creatures, that we must protect them and love them as we love ourselves, close quote. And that was Cesar Chavez, Glenn.
Oh, Cesar, what an awesome activist, organizer, one of the greatest. And
yes.
I have a little story about Cesar Chavez. When I was in grad school out in Colorado at Colorado State University, I went to hear him speak. He was promoting or doing a tour with a movie called The Wrath of Grapes, which was about the migrant workers working in the grape fields, and while they're out there picking the grapes, being sprayed by pesticides, by planes flying over, spraying them with pesticides, you know, with their children and everything right out there. And I sat and listened to that, and then the movie started playing, and I quickly went to the student center and typed up a petition and made copies in the copy shop and went back to this auditorium full of people and found pens wherever I could and started passing out this petition. And I got a couple hundred signatures on a petition. And then actually Sasha was up on the stage and he asked me, what's going on out there in the audience? And I went up and I said, I'm passing out this petition about banning pesticides on the university campus. And he said, give me that petition, I'll sign it. And so he signed my petition right in front of the audience. And I was very proud of the fact that when I submitted that petition, I actually had his signature first on a page. And I turned that in with his signature, asking the university to ban the indiscriminate spraying of pesticides on campus.
You get a silver star, Glenn. Good work.
So that was instant activism, taking advantage of an opportunity. I just remember that very fondly.
Right. That's something we all have to do in order to push back against the machine. All right. Well, I think that quote also takes us to our interview, no?
Yeah. And this is an example of superlative activism. I'm just going to say, recently we've had quite a few podcasts that have featured amazing activists, and this is another one. Laura is just doing an amazing thing, organizing and doing things at the community level with an eye on a bigger effort, which is a statewide ban on these incredibly toxic, devastating pesticides. Really, they're rodenticides, but they're killing more than rodents. I mean, that's a misnomer. They are biocides. They're killing indiscriminately all kinds of critters throughout the ecosystem. And we don't even know the extent of the damage, but there's plenty of indication that this is a big, big problem that needs to be fixed. And, you know, this is a great interview, again, with a fantastic activist who really shows us a model for activism. And I hope you're inspired by listening to her story And then I hope you'll follow up and get involved in this effort. This is what it takes. It takes people using their expertise like she has as being a wildlife biologist and then putting it to use for something that's really important for society. So we'll be back on the other side to talk more about it. So today on the Enviro Show, we are joined by Laura Kiesel. And Laura is a party to a petition for rulemaking requesting that the state of Massachusetts, specifically the Department of Ag Resources Pesticide Board, I believe it is, but you can correct me if I'm wrong, Laura. Laura is a party to an effort to put in place some controls or actually maybe even ban the use of very toxic anticoagulant chemicals that are used to poison. I'm just going to say they're used to poison wildlife. At least that's the way the application of these chemicals turn out to be used in the environment. But Laura, you know more about this. You can tell our listeners all about it. Please introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about what you do. And then let's get into this issue of these very toxic chemicals that are spread in the environment and that literally cause death and destruction of wildlife throughout Massachusetts. And unfortunately, it's not just limited to Massachusetts, but that's what we're focusing on today.
Great. Thank you for having me here today. And my name is Laura Kiesel. I am academically trained as a wildlife biologist. I attended UMass Amherst for several years where I studied wildlife biology. I used to live in Amherst for about 4 years.
UMass?
I did go to UMass for wildlife biology, yes, as a postgrad. I already had my BA in literature, but then I returned to school at UMass Amherst for wildlife biology, hence my interest in the rodenticide issue.
When was that, Laura? You were at UMass?
I was there from 2003 to 2005. Actually, I moved in 2002, but I enrolled in UMass in 2003, and I was physically there from 2003 to 2005, though I remained enrolled and did independent studies at UMass continuing into 2006, and then I transferred to UVM to finish my master's in Vermont in 2007. My focus at the time was mammalian biology. I was studying to become a wolf biologist, though I eventually shifted more into environmental policies and more general natural resources. And I completed my master's degree at the University of Vermont in natural resources management. And both in the lead up to getting my master's and also subsequent to it, I worked a lot in the field of environmental management and conservation and environmental education for several years. So I already had sort of a background and had some familiarity with these rodenticides. I worked for the town of Wellesley for their Natural Resources Commission. And at the time I worked there, the town of Wellesley was, I think, maybe the only municipality in Massachusetts that had a very strict integrated pest management policy where they did not allow chemical pesticides on their public properties unless there was a public emergency of some sort, in which case there was an exemption. And that included these rodenticides, even though it wasn't really emphasized much. But through that, I had a familiarity with this. I also am an environmental writer and journalist. And so I had also read a lot of news reports on this and was interested as a journalist. But basically, this issue followed me one day personally. I just came out in 2015 to my parking lot one day in the apartment complex I was living in at the time. And there was a pest control professional placing 20 bait stations around the property. And I was right away took note of the fact that he kind of evaded what they were. He made it sound like they were traps, even though they were clearly labeled as having poisons. And when I directly confronted him and mentioned that these poisons would have secondary impacts on the wildlife in the area, we had some red-tailed hawks nesting nearby at the time, as well as my pet cats. I mentioned I had two cats, and if a mouse ate the poison and got into my unit and my cat ate one of those mice, they could get sick. He flat out denied it. And so that set me on a course of like a multi-year battle with these poisons and trying to get them restricted, starting with my property, which I was not successful at till many years, in fact, until after I moved out. But that was basically what set me down this journey. And I live in Arlington, and we've had a number of very high profile wildlife deaths in recent years, but I was already very active on this issue up till then. But unfortunately, it didn't really penetrate mainstream consciousness until more recent years with the death of a bunch of wildlife. And we lost bald eagles here, which I can get into in greater depth. And we lost a family of great horned owls in Arlington. And that really started to trigger a lot more awareness. And so I started the website Save Arlington Wildlife in 2022. After the death of our great horned owls, and we had already lost our first bald eagle. And I just wanted information there and also to sort of help organize, because I found when it was just me or just a handful of individuals kind of disparate talking to public officials in our town, it didn't have the kind of power or momentum it has when you have like an umbrella group that you can call yourself and a website and, you know, online presence. So we organized under that. And it was someone else's idea. Alan Jones told me we should really have a website, maybe call it something like Save Arlington Owls or Save Arlington Eagles. But I wanted something to sort of encompass the full range of impacts on our wildlife. And so that's what started it. And it really helped because Arlington became the first municipality in the Commonwealth to specifically ban second generation anticoagulant rodenticides on its public properties. And we also became the first municipality to petition the state, it's called a home rule petition, to ban on private properties, because right now the state doesn't allow us to restrict or regulate any kind of pesticide, including rat poisons, on private property without special permission. To explain a little bit about what these poisons do is, like, they're supposed to be just for rats or mice. They go into these black boxes. They have both an opening and an exit. So some people think that the animals are trapped in there, but the whole purpose of these bait stations is that the animal goes in there, eats the poison, and then they leave in the outdoor environment. But what happens is they accumulate these poisons, the second generation poisons in particular. They don't kill them right away. That's on purpose, because rats are so smart that if they were to get sick right away, they would be able to realize that's the thing poisoning them, and they'd be able to communicate it with their family members. So it is purposely has a delayed reaction. So even though they get a fatal dose with their first feeding, they can feed many, many times beyond that fatal dose within the week or so that it takes for it to kill them. And it doesn't always kill them, because they can build biological immunity over time, the species. So by the time a hawk or an owl picks up this animal, they have so much poison in their system accumulated inside that it can sicken something much larger like an owl or a hawk. Not to mention owls or hawks can eat like a dozen rodents in a day. So they're getting many sources of this poison from the rodents they're eating when there are a lot of poisons. And I watched these poisons in 2015 when I first became involved. I barely ever saw a bait station in my town. And within a 6 to 7 month period, I watched as they went from a relative rarity to like every single street corner, I would see like several to a dozen of these bait stations. And I just knew that eventually it was going to catch up and the bill was going to come due. And that is what happened when we started losing our owls and our eagles. And I know that there were other wildlife deaths before that, but they were just under the radar because those weren't the quote unquote celebrity birds. So Save Arlington Wildlife helped kick off a movement after we did that, and we lost our second bald eagle, MK the Eagle. And she was beloved and known throughout the state and even the New England region. Wildlife photographers and tourists would come to Arlington to see her on her nest. We lost her in March of 2023. And under Save Arlington Wildlife, I held a demonstration, a vigil and a demonstration. I thought maybe I'd get a dozen or two dozen people would show up, but like 300 people showed up that night. And this was in early March. There was snow on the ground. It was pretty cold out, damp. So obviously many people were pretty motivated by her death to take action on this. And soon after, the city of Newton followed in our footsteps, and they too passed a public lands ban on the second generation anticoagulants and also submitted a home rule petition to the state to ban on their private properties. And right now, as of today's date, I think there are over a dozen Save Wildlife or Rescue Wildlife groups in Massachusetts, and most of them are aiming to do partially or all of what Save Arlington Wildlife helped achieve here in Arlington, which is, again, to pass a public lands ban in their respective community on these poisons, but also to try to submit a petition to the state. And so change is slow. And that's why also I've been working with a coalition of activists and wildlife rehabilitators to look at legal avenues that may be open to us And that's what led to the legal petition that was filed last month with the Harvard Animal Policy and Law Clinic is representing us. And we're asking for the immediate suspension in the registration and use of the anticoagulant rodenticides. Though we're still also, those of us who are working on the home rule petitions are still also keeping pressure that way as well, because I think that this is an issue we're going to have to take multiple avenues for trying to get progress on this issue. I don't think there's going to be a single method that's going to get us where we want to be and having less of these poisons in our environment.
Laura, let me jump in, and I'm a scientist, so I want to give a quick background about these toxic chemicals. And I know that there's a plant that grows, I don't know if it's an introduced or a native plant, but there's a plant that grows especially along roadsides called sweet clover. And mm-hmm. this sweet clover has a compound in it that when it wilts or when it's turned into silage, that compound, I think it's called Coumadin or something like that, it turns into a compound that's called dicumarol. And when animals, mm-hmm. especially ruminant animals, ingest like a fermented silage or spoiled cuttings from sweet clover, it poisons them by basically an anticoagulant action. Mm-hmm. In other words, the animal ingests it and starts hemorrhaging internally. Their mm-hmm. internal body cavities fill up with liquid and mm-hmm. they die a slow, painful death. And what was discovered was that compound actually could be used medicinally, and it's called Coumadin when it's prescribed by a doctor, and it's used for preventing high blood pressure and heart attacks as a blood thinner. Mm-hmm. And when you're prescribed that, you have to have constant monitoring done to adjust your dose of that poison, because with a lot of poisons, it's the dose that matters. And mm-hmm. again, it builds up in the body, and so it has to be monitored, and the dosage has to be adjusted very precisely, because there's a very low range between what causes harm and what has a beneficial blood thinning effect with that mm-hmm. compound. Well, that same compound is also called warfarin. Yes. And it's used, that's the first generation anticoagulant rodenticides that were put in these baits. And they figured, well, if it worked in inadvertently poisoning livestock, we could use it to poison animals that we want to target, like rats and mice and other things. And it works through the same mechanism. They ingest it, it gets into their bloodstream, and it causes their blood vessels to leak and hemorrhage mm-hmm. internally, so that the animals become very thirsty because they're essentially bleeding. The fluids are leaking out of their blood vessels. And it is a hideous way for any animal to die. It's a prolonged agonizing death from this kind of internal dysfunction of the circulatory system. And now there's this second generation poisons that you're talking about that are much more toxic, much more accumulating in organisms. And that's really where, if you think of the story in Silent Spring, Rachel Carson's famous book, where animals were being poisoned because these poisons were working their way up through the food chain. And of course, the predators, the eagles, the ospreys, the peak apex animals, they were at the top of the food chain, relying on eating a lot of other smaller animals, were accumulating these toxins. In that case, it was pesticides and DDT. But these chemicals are very similar in the way that they accumulate in organisms. And we're having the same thing now, 60 years, 70 years later, where we're having these chemicals that are being used, I'm going to say willy-nilly, unrestricted mm-hmm. throughout the environment and causing untold damage to non-target species. Like DDT was being sprayed on crops to kill insects, but the non-target species were all of the birds. And that's why it was Silent Spring, because we have no more birds singing, because they're all being killed by eating the insects that were poisoned. Well, in this case, we have the birds of prey being poisoned by eating these half-dead animals, because these poisons, like you said, are slow-acting but deadly, and they cause the animals to become lethargic, stagger around. you know, they can't avoid being picked off by predators, and therefore the secondary poisoning is intensifying the destruction. And the irony there is that these animals that would normally be controlling the rodent population, like owls and hawks and eagles, they're no longer able to do that because they're being killed by the poisoned animals instead. And so, you know, that's maybe more than irony, it's tragedy. But what's your group trying to accomplish by petitioning the Department of Ag Resources? What is your hope for how they're going to respond to this, what I'm going to say is widespread environmental damage to non-target species throughout the Commonwealth?
I mean, my hope is that they will respond, that they will do a fair assessment of the science that was presented in the petition and make the right decision, which is to suspend these rodenticides. At the very least, they need to be doing a proper review because, you know, the process is that they're supposed to do a review for every pesticide that they allow registration of in the Commonwealth to see if they have too many adverse environmental impacts. They're supposed to not just rubber stamp their registration. They're supposed to do a review and reconsider how they're regulated. And right now, I do feel like they're just being rubber stamped without really considering their widespread impacts. And unfortunately, the state has not really been formally tracking these impacts, unless it's a MESA listed species, like so under the Massachusetts Endangered Species Act, like the bald eagles, which we have had several deaths in the state necropsy and confirm that they're not really studying or testing all the other wildlife that are coming into wildlife rehabbers showing clear signs of anticoagulant poisoning, right? They're bleeding from their orifices. Their blood is not clotting when the rehabbers take blood samples. They're anemic. They're very dehydrated. They're showing all these signs. And luckily, the rehabbers, though it's come on their dime or through crowdfunding from citizens, so we're taking on the burden, funded a lot of necropsies for animals that we've found dead and dying around this area. So even Save Arlington Wildlife, I've gotten in the car and picked up dead owls and hawks, and I've worked with others to coordinate picking up dead hawks in the area. And every single one that we've picked up and crowdfunded to get necropsied has come back with anticoagulant rodenticide exposure. And every single one but one, and that was a car strike, had extremely high levels, often associated with lethal toxicosis. So it feels similar to Silent Spring too, is that it sort of is creeping up on us because we're not really testing it. The government is not really doing what it needs to do to be monitoring this and then mitigating its impacts, which I do think needs to be a suspension of the use. I don't think these poisons were never intended to be used prophylactically like they are. They're being used as preventatives. When my building in 2015, when they were putting those 20 bait stations around, there hadn't been any sightings of rodents at the time. They were putting them down as so-called preventatives, which is against EPA and the USDA's own recommendations for how to use these. They're not supposed to be put down extensively or long-term because by doing that, bait lures rodents into an area. You're basically acclimating them to long-term bait. Again, you're creating the opportunities for them to build more biological resistance. And as you mentioned, you're then killing off their predators, which in turn is going to artificially inflate the prey population. So I mentioned my background was I was studying to be a wolf biologist, and you've probably heard of the whole study in Yellowstone that showed because wolves were taken out of that ecosystem, the deer populations exploded. They overbrowsed the territory. So a lot of the vegetation and the trees wound up dying off. And then you had this whole cascade effect. It's called like a trophic cascade, where then the songbirds disappear and the beavers disappear and like the stream banks dry up. So there's just so many other ripple effects to this. And I think what we're dealing with is something similar here. You're killing off these apex predators, which are these birds of prey, as well as like you're also impacting other predator species like coyote and foxes as well. And then in turn, you're going to wind up with more rodents. And we're creating this vicious cycle where then people put out more poison. But you're basically, by taking out the birds of prey, you're basically going to ensure that there is a mainstay of these rodents, because Rodents and their predators have evolved over millions of years. These rodents cannot outsmart the predators in a sustained way, the way they can eventually learn to outsmart or identify bait stations. They can't build biological immunity to the birds of prey the way they can poison. So the birds of prey are our best bet to having an equilibrium. And when we get rid of those, I think we're basically, the irony is we're actually incurring what the rodenticides are supposed to be addressing.
Well, Laura, this is DL here. I'm wondering about family pets. You know how people consider their cats and dogs much more than wildlife. Are you finding a lot of dogs and cats being affected by this?
Yes, dogs and cats are also very vulnerable. I don't think quite to the degree that wildlife are, but there have been a number of pet deaths. MSPCA is very involved in this issue, and they've advocated, they have supported our home rule petitions to suspend the use of eschars in Arlington and the other communities that have worked to pass this, because they've noted that at MSPCA in their vet offices, they see dozens of cases of suspected or known poisonings of dogs and cats every year. I know someone in New York, it was a very tragic case where she stayed at an Airbnb that was certified dog friendly, and they had a lot of these bait stations around the property with these anticoagulants. There were a lot of heavy rains that week. This was at the end of last year. And the residue of the bait actually flooded out onto the lawn. And, you know, dogs like to consume grass. So the dog hadn't gotten into the bait or even eaten a mouse. It had just chewed on the grass near the bait station that had been tainted with the poisons. And the dog unfortunately passed away. And she did pay for a pathology report and an autopsy done. And there was, Glenn mentioned with the wildlife, there was just widespread internal bleeding that was consistent with the anticoagulants. So that must have been what caused it. And I know right now she had been in a back and forth with Airbnb about removing that dog friendly label. So yeah, dogs and cats are very vulnerable both to the firsthand exposure, because even though these poisons are supposed to be in bait stations that are tamper resistant, I've seen on multiple occasions these bait stations broken open or cracked open. In fact, one of the times I observed, it was right next to a Petco where they do their puppy training classes, sometimes right outside. And I had to call the animal control officer to remove that bait station. I've seen squirrels break these bait stations open and eat the bait, but then the bait is just exposed. Sometimes people tamper with them, so the animals can get into them directly that way. But as we know, sometimes dogs and cats also consume rodents, and they can also get secondary poisoning impacts as well. So those are two ways. And as I mentioned, with the bait tainting grass or things like that or outside of the station, the animal can also become exposed. So yes, cats and dogs are definitely frequent victims. And we talk about that a lot as well in our advocacy work, because as you noted, not everyone is endeared or knowledgeable about wildlife, but almost everyone cares about their companion animals and has a vested interest in keeping them safe.
We have talked about this issue on the show on a few different times in the past. And one of the things that I believe is that this kind of poison should be regulated by the Board of Health in each town. Mm-hmm. The Board of Health should be able to regulate these kinds of community-wide poisoning activities. And this is essentially, when you put these bait stations out, especially when a commercial entity comes in, what they get paid for is by poisoning the community. That's how they make their money. And, you know, they may say, oh, it's safe. Oh, you know, we're following protocol, blah, blah, blah. But what they're doing is they're spreading toxins throughout the community. And I think that's a public health issue. And I think that the local boards of health and, you know, the health departments should be able to regulate these things. And I understand that there's all kinds of federal preemption having to do with pesticides, but those laws are outdated. And we know, you know, we know so much more than we did when the Federal Insecticide and Rodenticide Act was passed. Those bills are so outdated, they need to be updated. And we need to have the ability to regulate these, I think, at the local level. And mm-hmm. what you're saying is various communities have banned the use of these on public spaces, you know, that are controlled by the towns, but they also need the ability to control them on private property, because these toxins, they don't stop at the property line. They're being mm-hmm. transmitted throughout the community. That's one thing that I hope that this petition will lead to, is to some ability for the towns to actually regulate this at the town level. And then if enough towns do that, which I think is the good model to follow, eventually the state will have to try to level the playing field, because the industry hates to have different regulations in each jurisdiction, each town that they deal with. Mm-hmm. They hate that. They want some kind of uniformity. So I think that's a great approach. And as far as this petition, I've read through the whole thing, and I think it's great. It's very well-reasoned. It's devastating if you read it and understand what the issue really is, the fact that we're spreading these toxins throughout the environment. And I know from, you know, being a scientist that one of the big concerns for using toxic chemicals is the fate that these toxins have in the environment. Like, we know now that PFAS, forever chemicals, are spread throughout the environment and are in everybody's blood everywhere in the world because we use them for convenience. And that's the same thing that we're doing with these, you know, second generation anticoagulant rodenticides. We're using them because they're cheap and they may be effective, right, and the place that they're being put, but they have all of these secondary impacts, unintended consequences. And so we really need to, like you said, reevaluate the use of these, because they're just being done for expediency and for because they're so cheap. And that's mm-hmm. the wrong way to deal with public health, I believe. I understand that, yes, you know, hundreds of years ago, we did have rat infestations that spread bubonic plague, but things have changed. We have a lot more controls in place. We have a lot more non-lethal alternatives to these poisons. And a lot of smart people have thought about this. And what we have left are the really stupid people promoting the use of these toxic chemicals, of which no one is measuring the fate of them in the environment. So I'm really glad that as activists, you know, you've gotten this group of people together to petition the government, because this is clearly a problem that needs to be addressed. And I'm hoping that they will address this petition in the way that it should be addressed, by severely limiting, restricting, or banning the use of these toxic poisons in the environment. But for now, what we'd really like our listeners to know is, how can they find out more about this? You have the website you mentioned. How can they get on a listserv? How can they support this petition effort? Can they send letters to the editor? Can they send letters to their elected officials? Mm-hmm. Can they send them into the Healey administration? You know, what can folks do? What can people do? Like you said, we need to organize in order to be effective. And who are the key decision makers that we should be targeting? And how can folks find out that information and take action? Because that's really what's needed here, is we all need to address this problem and work together to eliminate it for the sake of the community, for the sake of the wildness that surrounds us, the wildlife, and all the critters who have no voices.
Exactly.
Yes. So I think letters to the editor are great if people are reading this about this petition and want to write their local newspaper saying that they support it. That is always wonderful to help spread awareness. And, you know, officials, I know a lot of times even the state reps and senators will read papers that are in their districts. I also think, even though it's separate, even Harvard Law has mentioned this, like, that it is really important that people support the home rule petitions that are from Arlington and Newton, and now Newberry just submitted theirs. Both Arlington and Newton's made it out of the environmental committee, and that's extremely rare. In general, like 95% or more of bills die in committee, and especially home rule petitions have very like steep climbs. And so the fact that both Newton and Arlington's home rule petition to ban eschars on private property made it out of committee and are circulating around the legislature right now is really good news, that at least the politicians are paying attention and know that this is something the public, you know, has some increased awareness about. But we really need people from all over the state writing their respective state senators and reps to support those articles, because a lot of times they think, oh, well, it's an Arlington home rule petition or it's a Newton. It doesn't impact us. But A, even though these home rule petitions are specific to those communities, we need the buy-in of the whole legislature for those home rule petitions to pass. So everyone in the legislature will eventually have to vote if it continues, you know, to move on to the House floor and Senate. So we need everyone to do that, to talk to their legislators in their respective community to say, I support the Arlington and Newton's home rule petitions. Because if those pass, those will establish firm legal precedents for other communities being able to regulate and restrict SGARs on private properties. And it can only lend leverage and momentum to Harvard's petition if those pass or continue to progress through the legislature. So that's probably number one, is to support those home rule petitions. And I have a lot of information on my website on SaveArlingtonWildlife.org, like ways to get involved. I have frequent updates. The numbers of the legislation tend to change. So I'll look up and make sure I have the most recent numbers, because, you know, as they get elected out of committee and then go to this committee and come out, they tend to change the numbers around, which sometimes confuses people. But still, like, if you tell your representative or senator, like, I support the home rule petition from Arlington and Newton about the second generation anticoagulant rodenticides, they'll know what you're talking about, or they'll be able to look it up. But you can look at that on my Facebook page for Save Arlington Wildlife. I regularly, every week or so, I do a nudge or a reminder on these home rule petitions. And I'll be also offering updates on the Harvard petition as it evolves, when we get a response from the state, et cetera. And the other thing people can do is, if, like I said, there's now over a dozen, there may be close to 20 Save Wildlife or Rescue Wildlife chapters or groups in Massachusetts. See if there's one in your community and get involved, and see if then you could work on the local level, because more public lands bans also lend to the momentum. More home rule petitions also lend leverage to the ones that are already circulating and to the Harvard petition, because it shows more and more constituents are on board. And if you don't have a Save Wildlife group and you want to start one, I do have an activist toolkit on the Save Arlington Wildlife page that sort of gives like a bullet by bullet instruction, you know, that you can follow as loosely or as tightly as you want for what we did here in Arlington to help get those passed here. And I know that that has been helpful to some of the other Save Wildlife groups as they've progressed and replicated some of these efforts in their own communities. So that's what I would say are probably the most powerful ways you can get involved right now if you're a Massachusetts resident and want to support the Harvard petition, is doing these other actions that basically serve as like sort of pillars to pull it up and buoy it up before MDAR makes a decision.
Excellent.
Yeah, Laura, I want to say that, you know, this kind of activism is what really gets us excited on this show. And you are an example of someone who I think is just so dedicated to coming up with a plan to address, you know, this is an environmental injustice. I mean, like I said, the wildlife, they don't speak for themselves. You know, we may see these animals, you know, dead on the side of the road, but they don't tell us why they died, how they died. And the fact that you've taken this on, I think, is just an amazing thing. And we need more of this kind of activism. So I hope our listeners will go to your website, sign up for your newsletters or email list, and, you know, work locally as well in their communities to join this effort. You know, this is going to be a statewide effort to ban these toxic poisons from all of our communities. It's really something that's pretty outrageous when you look into it and find out that, you know, animals are being indiscriminately poisoned for just convenience purposes and for profit, basically. So I want to thank you so much for being on the show and for, you know, telling us this really tragic story, but also for the fact that you're getting beyond the part of being bummed out and have actually come up with a plan to address how to deal with this and how we can fix this problem. Because I think the system is broken and we need to all work together to fix it and make it better. So I want to thank you so much for all of the work that you've been doing, and along with the other folks that you're working with. And we will continue to follow this evolving story on the show, but I want to thank you for being on and for enlightening our listeners about this situation.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you so much for having me here. I appreciate you caring so much about this issue.
There we are. We are back. And it's such a heartbreaker. There were a lot of photos that came up on the websites I went to when I was looking into this. And I didn't want to put any of them on the blog. The one I chose on top is actually a healthy eagle who seems very annoyed about rodenticides. But it's grim. It is really a grim way to go. Here we are subjecting all this wildlife and even family pets to that kind of death.
Yeah, this may sound like a cliche or a phrase or whatever, but it's the slaughter of the innocents.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's really what it comes down to, is that these poisons are so indiscriminate that they're unintentionally, but really when you think about it, it's just that the people that are spreading these toxins just don't care. They don't care at all. And that's what we have to make up for. We have to make up for their lack of compassion, their lack of moral fiber. And we have to take action to stop this. It's a wildlife holocaust, basically. So I don't feel that that's hyperbole. If we don't stop this, there's no telling how much damage will be done. So
right.
Let's all work on this, and we'll continue to follow this issue. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that, you know, when enough people do this, take action, that we will get some kind of a result.
Right. And you were spot on bringing up Rachel Carson's Silent Spring, because it's a similar situation. Anyway, and let me think. I think we're just about out of here, Glenn, but I'm forgetting something.
Yeah, you know, you got to remember.
What?
To listen to your mother. I'm Glenn Ayers.
And this is Tia, saying adios.
Take care, folks, and get active.
I am Mother Earth, and I approve of this message.